Welcome to Take the Forest Path podcast. This is the place for unique and creative guided meditations, as well as the exploration of various topics on the journey to our true selves and our true purpose. So, hello, everybody. This is your host, Katarina. And today I have a very special guest with me, Michelle Talker. She is an author, storyteller, and producer, and she's very passionate. This is what we actually connected on, very passionate about the power of myths and fairy tales, and basically how we can draw inspiration and meaning from them in our own lives. She's created an amazing story exploration course called Wonderlit, which we'll talk about. And she's the author of some incredible books. And she's also written and produced several moving short films and the audio play called The Departure Train. So I'm really, really excited to have you, really excited to talk about this story, Catherine and Her Destiny. But is there anything you'd like to add, Michelle, before we get started?
No, that's a wonderful introduction.
Okay, great.
Yeah, so, lovely to be here. Thank you for inviting me.
Great. Yeah, I think that I definitely found a couple of your books first, I think. The May Queen was the first one I read, and I loved it because it talked about fairy tales. And then I think that's where I found Wonderlit. So I took there are two programs in Wonderlit, right? The story course,
yes,
and the Otherworld Journey.
Yes.
Otherworld Journey. And the story course, I went through that, and I go through that honestly. I mean, whenever I find a fairy tale or a story that I'm drawn to, I will go through that course, or at least parts of it, because it's been so helpful for me when I'm drawn to something to be able to figure out what it is that's calling me through the exercises that you have. So I actually wanted to first, before we go into the story, to sort of ask you, like, how do you like to first approach fairy tales? What do you feel like would be helpful for people to kind of know if they want to do it on their own?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, great question. Wonderlit is created for people to come in wherever they are, like whether they know stories or have heard new ones or have just heard them or are looking for new ones. They basically can come in through the story finder on Wonderlit. We just actually introduced tags. So you can go in through themes like belonging, addiction, you know, all kinds of different sort of situations that fairy tales find people in. And so you can go and kind of explore. Once you have found something in a story, you can go in that way. And find the story. It's right there. You know, you can read it and see how it feels. Some people come into stories through pictures and illustrations and artwork that draws them in. And of course, there are amazing story fairy tale illustrators from the Golden Age, early 1900s, late 1800s, and into the first part of the 20th century and on from there. So, yeah, that's another great way in. But usually, you know, when people hear a story told or they've read a story, the very first thing that I would ask them to do is think about the pictures. You know, think about the pictures that pull you in. So it might just be a really simple scene, like, you know, the steadfast tin soldier going down the water chute through the tunnel. You know, or any picture, you know, Snow White standing in the window reaching for the apple, lots of different pictures. And that's usually the way in, because very much like dreams, when you are recording a dream or you're thinking about a dream, it's usually some main thing that causes you to want to reflect on it. So stories, fairy tales act the same way. They're like communal dreams. So it's always about what are the images that draw you in?
Yeah, it's so interesting that you say that. And because the first fairy tale that I did through the story course was I came up with an image, and I didn't actually know right away what story it was connected with, but it was like a woman in a garden. And so then I used the, at that time, the story finder was a little different. I love how you've adapted it, but it still allowed me at that time to find this fairy tale when I was kind of looking up like garden and woman in garden, mm-hmm. that kind of thing. And the fairy tale that came up was The Enchanted Snake, which I hadn't actually read before. And so I read that fairy tale and it was really amazing because I got stuck on this one part. I won't go into it too much, but I got stuck on this one part and I basically had this breakthrough because of this part in the fairy tale that I was stuck on, and it helped my anxiety at the time. My anxiety after that like decreased by half. Because there was something about the story where I realized that I was prioritizing like every little thing in my life. And this story, she had prioritized one thing and that was on her mind. That was her focus. And I realized through the story that, oh my gosh, I don't really need to be prioritizing every little exam. I was in school at the time, every little exam I'm going to take, every little question I asked the professor. And it was one of the only times, you know, where I, the next day I went to class and I, it was just a drastic change. My anxiety had just decreased. So it was funny because I mean, I found that story through illustrations.
Yes.
It was fascinating.
Illustrations. Yes. Yeah. And you can search that way, you know, like, garden, you can put that in the story finder search mechanism and you can find all the gardens. And it's such an intuitive process. I yeah. just love the process of saying, okay, I'm looking for that story. And, you know, it's like when you set out to look for your beloved and your beloved sets out to look for you, you know, it's that kind of thing where things happen. If you keep on the search for that story, it's going to come to you in some way, whether it's through a picture or through, you know, happening upon something that you think, oh, well, that's sort of interesting. And then you go down that path and, oh, there you find the thing that helps you with that bit of grit that you're dealing
yeah.
with.
Oh, yes. And that is where this story that we're going to talk about. So we're going to talk about this fairy tale called Catherine and Her Destiny, which I think is an Italian fairy tale.
Yes,
and
yes.
I had never heard of it until a couple years ago. You mentioned it to me. I'm not sure why. Yeah. And so I read it and I was intrigued by it right away. Like you were saying, this fairy tale, I think for the past couple of years has definitely been one that's impacted my life. And so would you like to kind of do a short overview? And yeah. and I will for everyone listening, I will link the story so that you can go and read it. And it's in the Pink Fairy book by Andrew
yes.
Lang. So you
yes.
can find it there too. Yeah.
Yes, yes. It's quite easy to find online. So yes, well, just as a recap, quite quickly, Catherine and Her Destiny starts with Catherine being the only child with her mother not around. She's died or something, we don't know. But she's living with her father, and her father is a very wealthy man. And they live in this mansion. And when Catherine is in her teens, she's in her bedroom one night, and this goddess appears to her and calls herself Her Destiny. And she's got a little wheel. And she says to Catherine, you have a choice. You can be happy in old age, or you can be happy in youth. But you can't have it both ways. So you have to make a choice. And Catherine thinks to herself, well, I want to have something to look forward to. So I guess if I had to choose, I would choose happiness in old age. Well, it's done. And the goddess disappears. And then really shortly after that, all these things start to go wrong in her father's business life. He's invested everything in these ships, and the ships go down at sea, and he loses everything. And he is so distraught by the loss of his entire fortune that he dies of basically disappointment. And so Catherine is left on her own, and she's out on the streets with not very many skills. And she goes to a village and she's walking along the street wondering what she's going to do. And a woman in an apartment sees her on the street and says, "Hi, you know, you're very beautiful. And what are you doing?" And she says, "I'm looking for work." And she says, "Well, come on up here because I need somebody to look after my house." So Catherine goes up and starts to work for her. And it turns out that Catherine's very orderly and she loves to mend and sew and stuff. And she gets everything put in order. And no sooner does she have everything put in its place than the door bursts open and her destiny appears and says, "You didn't think I was going to make it easy on you, did you?" And she throws everything in the room out of place. She pulls open the drawers. She throws everything on the floor. She rips up things that have been mended. And Catherine is so ashamed and takes this all on as her fault and can't meet her mistress. So she runs away from that village and she goes to another village. And the same thing happens again. Everything is in order and her destiny comes blowing through the door and turns everything upside down. This goes on for 7 years until Catherine is just desperate. And she comes to this town that's at the foot of a mountain. And she goes to work with a woman who says to her, "Okay, so, you know, you have all the other housework to do. That's fine. But I also am not very, you know, my legs aren't working too well. And I go every day to offer bread to my destiny at the top of the mountain at the shrine. So I would like you to do that for me every day. Go up and offer my bread to my destiny." Well, for Catherine, this is pretty bizarre. You know, it's like your destiny, you actually have a relationship. So anyway, every morning she goes up and she calls her mistress's destiny. And then she appears out of the clouds and she gives her this loaf of bread and then goes down the mountain. And that's the way the days pass. And Catherine's pretty much left alone now, it seems. Her destiny isn't barging through the door, but she's still feeling dread and she's unhappy. And her mistress notices that. And she says, "You know what's going on, Catherine? Why are you so unhappy?" So she tells her, and then she says, the mistress says, "Well, have you ever thought of actually going and calling your destiny? Like, why don't you have a conversation with her and find out what's going on and if she intends to leave you in peace?" And so she says, "Go to call my mistress and then ask my mistress to call your destiny." So the next morning, Catherine goes up and speaks to her mistress's destiny. And basically she says, "Well, you know, she can't come and see you, but come again tomorrow and I'll take you to where she is." So the next day, Catherine goes out into this cloudy landscape with the goddess of her mistress's destiny. And she takes her to a place where her destiny, Catherine's destiny, is lying in the ground under 7 covers. And she rises up under the 7 covers and doesn't speak to Catherine, but gives her a ball of silk thread, a beautiful color of silk thread. And Catherine takes it down the mountain, wondering, what kind of use is this? Like, why did she do that? I don't understand my destiny any better than I ever did. And her mistress says to her, "Well, put it away because you never know when it might be useful to you." And so she does. And then a little while later, the king in that region is getting married to an arranged bride. And his tailors have made her wedding dress, but they're missing a little bit of thread. And they can't find it anywhere because it's this unique color. And so Catherine takes the thread out and goes to see the king. And the king asks her where she got this thread. And she finally tells him, even though it's quite a spiritual story, she tells him nonetheless. And he says, well, you know, let's put it on a scale and I'll give you its weight of gold in gold. So they take out a scale, put some gold on it. Thread is much heavier. Take out a bigger scale, put more gold on it. Still, it's too heavy. It's heavier than all the gold. Finally, they get out a huge scale. The king puts everything on it and tops it off with his own crown. And still, that little ball of thread is heavier. And a wise woman steps forward and she says, I see that you are the intended queen, and you will end your life as the queen. And the king then takes her for his wife. And Catherine lives the rest of her life in contentment, and she dies in happiness.
That was a beautiful retelling. Thank you, Michelle. Yeah, so I wanted to start with, like, when you first heard this story. I'm also curious when you first heard it, like how long ago, like, and how did it come to you? And what were your first impressions? Do you remember?
I was, in order to create the Story Finder, I started reading stories avidly. I went through about 8 of the 12 colored fairy books and told them from all these different points of view and put them in the Story Finder. And I think that's when I first encountered this story. I hit upon this story and went, wow, this story. It was in 2014. And so I had not heard it told. I did lift it off the page and I told it at an event here called 1001 Friday Nights of Storytelling in Toronto here. And yes, so it really spoke to me, sang to me really this story. But that's where I first encountered it.
Wow. Yeah. I remember when I first read this. I haven't read as many fairy tales as you, but the ones that I have read, sometimes when people read a lot, you kind of notice like themes and like, oh, okay, the three tasks, or they have a lot of similar things in several different fairy tales, even cross-culturally. And this one was a little different. I hadn't quite heard this type of storyline before. So that was the first thing that kind of piqued my interest. But I also remember that I think that I was drawn to the story, one, because I could relate a lot to Catherine. And what stood out to me first was that idea of her trying so many things and wanting, having this hope and wanting things to work out, and then kind of having it like dashed to pieces, and she has to figure it, almost feeling like she has to start from ground zero again. So this like frustration and sort of disappointment, I think a lot of people can relate with. And that was what I related with first. And I remember that was sort of my first impression, was almost feeling this kinship a little bit with Catherine and what she had to go through.
Yeah. Yeah, it's so strong, isn't it, in the story? Mm-hmm. It's so relatable. All this disruption, like sequential disruption. Yeah, I think when I first went into the story, the very first picture that kind of spoke to me was Catherine in her bedroom meeting with the goddess for the first time. When I was in my teens, my dad became very rich very quickly, and then we lost all our money. It was interesting because I saw myself in my bedroom meeting destiny. I really could easily put myself in that place. Mm-hmm. And when I came into the story, I was just into my 60, early 60s, and I was starting to think about, you know, all the years that I've been dealing with chronic pain for so many years, and it just seemed like all this stolen life. And I was really pissed off about it. And I really needed that engagement with destiny. Like, let's have a conversation.
Yes, that was the other thing. When I read this story, I was interested, I was curious, but I was also mad at destiny. I was, and the biggest thing for me was I just could not understand or wrap my head around, why would she give her a choice? Was that necessary? I wrote in my journal, I just read it kind of to prepare for this and to refresh my memory. And I just wrote all of this stuff about, why did she have to give a choice? Like destiny, like, what is the point of this destiny? And yeah, that emotion definitely came up in me too, reading this story.
Yes, yes. And it's interesting because we don't really have an engagement with destiny in our cultural narrative. We don't even think about destiny. At one point in my process with this story, because I took it all through Wonderlit, both courses and into that deep other world journey. And I just, you know, spent quite a long time with it. And it just, like this engagement with the idea of destiny, like we think of Lady Luck, or we might think of fate. Do we really think about destiny and how we are destined in our lives to certain things? And how do we feel about our destiny? You know, have we had a, like, for me, I think from the time, this is quite mysterious to me, because ever since I was young, I had this sense of destiny. I had this sense of mission in the world and purpose that was very, like, seemed to have come in with me. But I didn't know how that was going to unfold or what it even meant, and had no tools in our cultural narrative to engage with that mystery. So this story really allows us to do that.
Yeah, I love that. And that was also the mystery of it, and this relationship, instead of just like a passing with destiny, like you were saying, like, yeah, we do talk about fate a little bit, or like you were saying, oh, it's just luck, but it's almost this sense of, it's just like this touch and go, sort of like passing, no, not really a face or a personality applied to it at all. Not a conversation between us and them. It's just sort of this elusive kind of concept. And in this story, it very much is, not only with Catherine and her destiny, like in the beginning, and that relationship, but also I liked how in your storytelling of Catherine and her destiny, you mentioned that the older woman at the end had a different relationship with her destiny. And Catherine got to sort of see how it can be different. And that just is such an interesting concept. And it makes me sort of think, like, this story to me very much kind of highlighted like growing pains. So like moving from childhood and then sort of, you know, 20s or like the growing pains, like midlife, and adapting and sort of more moving into like a stable, maybe more mature, but more like accepting relationship with ourselves and our lives.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. And it seems to be rooted, for me at any rate, I was really interested in Catherine's father because of his narrative. Like, he is a self-made man. And, you know, all those theories that came out of the 19th century about progress and how you have to take your luck into your own hands and make your fortune.
Yes.
And, you know, it's all your own responsibility. You have nothing to do with any of these sort of airy-fairy notions of fate and destiny. It's all up to you to make yourself wealthy and make yourself into somebody.
Yeah.
And Catherine's father has no safety net. He has no other narrative. When his wealth disappears, he falls, and his fall is into a bottomless place because he doesn't have any other way of seeing what happened to him and what his destiny might have been. So I found that so interesting.
I didn't even think about that. And as you were saying that, it kind of reminded me of how that at the beginning of the story, Catherine sort of takes on the way that he, it seems like, went through the world, and how she was like, okay, great. It was, she sort of had this hopefulness, but also this sense of, yeah, I mean, it's on me. I'm going to do it. And she did go through that way, but it never worked out because destiny kept intervening.
Yes. Right.
And in the end, she had to really sit back, be patient, and do it a different way. Like there was a different way for her.
Yes. Yes. And for just as you were saying earlier too, you know, this turning point for Catherine, for me, was when she started taking that bread up the mountain. And I walked up that mountain with Catherine every day because I decided I have to go for a walk every day. I have to go to the park. And it was winter during this time. And I was like, I have to go to the park and I have to make an offering to the birds and mm-hmm. express my gratitude for life as it is. Because she influenced me just like an older sister would influence you. And the way she had been influenced by her own mistress in the story, it kind of passed down from her then to me. So I was out there in the park with my handful of peanuts, and I started to get to know the birds. I was feeding chickadees and woodpeckers. I developed this relationship with a downy woodpecker that I called Gordy Gord. And I'd arrive and he'd fly all around me and land on my hand. And it was just such a lovely thing. And it elevated my experience, and it was a difficult time. So it was, it just made it possible to be in a different relationship with that difficult time.
Yeah. Wow. Isn't that amazing how sometimes those scenes, I think that's what I just love about fairy tales, is that they really can be so magical in that way, where even though a lot of us were brought up, we kind of thought of fairy tales again as just like, you know, it's just some made up stories. But the more I look into them, the more I see these parallels symbolically. And sometimes what you were saying, that's, I mean, walking, even like the bread offering, you know, a lot of people like feed bread to birds, and it's just like, I can't even believe sometimes that's just like such a parallel with this story.
Yeah. They translate, they translate to us in some way, and we never know how they're going to translate, but oh my God, they give me so much inspiration, these stories. I can't even think of when I've gone through the Wonderlit process. I don't think there's ever been a time when I didn't have an art project appear out of the blue. Like, you know, in Catherine and Her Destiny, it was over Christmas, and I started doing all these snowmen. I was making cards and doing, I found white ink on dark paper, and I started making all these snowmen, and they were all these different characters, and they were all white on dark. And I just, you know, gets right inside you and starts to precipitate this changed relationship with, you know, the challenges.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's interesting that you brought up the scene with her going up the mountain, because so one of the things in Wonderlit where you have the section that talks about finding what's at the heart of the story for everybody. And I put a quote here that's in the course, and it says, the scene that is at the heart of the story for you is the scene to which you have the strongest emotional connection. And when I went through this with Catherine and Her Destiny, I think that one scene for me was when she got to that woman's house and started climbing that mountain every day. When I read that, it was such a clear shift into more of like surrendering around just her life and how, and acceptance and surrender, but it didn't feel like completely just giving up to me. which I think this is why it stuck out to me, because sometimes I think, especially when we're growing up, we think we have to either just go, go, go. And we just can't, like, we have to have our mind focused and we can't, otherwise we're just going to give up, which means we check out of life.
Yeah.
And this was like a third way. When I read it, it was like a surrender and acceptance, but it wasn't a checking out of life. She was still doing this very important act every day. And then she was just waiting patiently.
Yes. There's so much waiting in this story, isn't there? There's so much waiting. I'm thinking about the thread too, you know, and how, well, what the heck am I supposed to do with this thread? Well, you know, put it away and wait and see when it will be useful. And yeah, that's there's a lot of surrender, and at the same time, there's also confrontation.
Ooh, say more about that. I like that.
Well, just like you're saying, she has this ritual. Now she has to go up the mountain and do this thing. But then at a certain point, you know, she is basically told, why don't you confront your destiny? Why don't you call her? Why don't you have a conversation with her? You know, get a little deeper here. So gratitude, yes. And then questioning and engagement and even confrontation, all these emotions Catherine had, all these mysteries, she really wanted to know. So if she hadn't asked, she wouldn't have been taken to that place for her destiny.
Yes. And then it makes me think about, she even had to have some confrontation when she went to the king and offered her ball of yarn.
Yeah.
The silk thread. That was also, and then, I mean, that whole conversation and scene with her standing there and they're weighing it out. And then he puts his, I mean, just that whole thing was such a difference from in the beginning when she was sort of just happened upon these jobs. And then she would run away from the jobs. Such a different feel.
Yeah. And she, there's a few, you know, how these stories are kind of, there's grit in them and they kind of bug you in certain ways. And that confrontation or what standoff or whatever you want to call it with the king bothered me. You know, it's like, well, if you don't tell me the real story, then I'm going to have your head. I didn't put that in the story that I told, but it is in the original. So
I know. There.
And, you know, but then when you think about it, you get under the first layers of that thing, you start to see, okay, well, the king belongs to this more empirical worldview. And so Catherine's not going to tell him all these spiritual, mysterious kind of things that are going on in her life. That's not how she presents it in the beginning. And then he challenges her and says, you know, I'm going to have your head if you don't tell me the truth about where this ball of thread came from. And at that point, then she tells her actual story of destiny.
It's so interesting how in so many fairy tales, it sort of the ending, like their reconciliation or their regaining of the throne or whatever, has to do with first them like speaking about their story and their truth. It's so beautiful. And then I'm thinking of the goose girl that happens in that story too, where she has to like voice her story and what happened to her first, even though in that story, she doesn't even tell it to someone. She just like says it into like an iron stove, but then she's overheard by the king. And that's how she regains her position of being the princess and then eventually the queen, I'm sure.
Well, isn't that interesting? I'm thinking as you're saying that it's interesting that this king had a kind of arranged marriage with this other bride. And that's also a pattern that we see in the stories. The king is going to marry somebody who is a false bride. And so she steps into the role of the true queen when she brings forth the spiritual content of this ball of thread, which makes that ball of thread so much more valuable than just a ball of thread that's going to complete a dress.
Oh, like the timing sort of it all.
Yeah.
That was one thing that struck me so much with the story was that the ending, it wasn't just what Catherine did or didn't do that allowed her to step into that happy life. It was, there were so many things around her that had to sort of connect at the right time. It was the king who was going to get married, which she had no control over. And then it was whoever chose to take that special color of the silk thread to make the dress, which she had no control over. And then they happened to not have enough. And then she was given that ball of yarn as a gift and she thought it was useless. But then the other woman told her, well, you should probably hang on to it. It was so many different things. And she had a part, obviously, and she had to actually go and present it. But so many things seemingly outside of her had to line up. And it just made me think about how we're not alone, I guess. That's what it made me think of. Like there's so many influencing factors around us and the people in our lives and things that are going on at this time. And then we're at, you know, what we're doing in relation to what everybody's doing that sort of affects our life versus
it's
just me.
A huge orchestration, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah. And in the story, I thought it was just so beautiful how it ended that way. And that's why just like that thread of being a child in the beginning and kind of just like feeling comfort and safety and all of that. But there's also a sense of, you know, like immaturity, maybe like wildest dreams, kind of just acceptance and being like, oh yeah, it'll be like this forever sort of thing. And then those growing pains that she had to go through to get, and it's like, it was necessary for her to get to that place where she could develop that patience and acceptance, but also recognizing that, like you were saying, that sometimes confrontation and showing up has to happen in order for us to step into the next phase or, you know, create certain things in our lives.
Yeah. Yeah. You can't just wait. You can't just surrender. You have to be pursuing something that you care about. I think a lot of these stories have so much to do with helping us to develop our real faith. Like a practiced faith and really, you know, recognize that the gifts that we're given keep coming to us as we go forward. But if you don't go forward into the mystery, then you don't get anything. You can't move. You're kind of stagnant. So if you move forward towards the dream that you have, the vision, the love, then you are aided along the way in all these different ways. But I also think it's so interesting that what Catherine is given by her destiny, it's almost premature because she shook the monkey tree, you know?
It's
like, give me that now. I want something from you. So she gives it to her, but still, you know, it's not very useful right now. But you'll need it. You know, it's like you don't need the scalpel till you're cutting open the patient. But so, you know, Catherine's standing there with the scalpel for a while.
Yeah.
Before it's needed.
That's so interesting. I never thought of it that way because, yeah, when she, I'm not sure if you added this in your retelling, but she, when she goes to that destiny, she in like the pink fairy tale, they say that she's under like 7 coverlets and she's sleeping. The destiny is sleeping. Yes. And then it begs the question, well, was she going to wake up at a certain time and then bring the thread anyway to her? It's a really interesting thought experiment.
Yes, it is, isn't it?
It is.
Yes.
And even if she did sort of pursue it prematurely, it was still useful later. She just had to wait, which is also interesting. Kind of this idea of yes, timing, but also it like maybe the timing can be flexible too, to some extent for what we're pursuing and what we're doing.
Because we don't always know what the usefulness of something is. And when we're living in a narrative like we still are, that is so utilitarian, we're constantly thinking that everything has to be useful. You know, and I've struggled with this my entire life because I've been passionate about fairy tales, which are not considered to be useful to most people at all. But I have really felt that they are an extremely deep source of wisdom and support to us. You know, and you never really know when the thing that you love and that you're devoted to is going to find its time. You know, there's this old concept of time that's Cronus, which is linear time, like calendar time. Mm-hmm. But then there's this older concept of Kairos, this Greek idea of time being the blossoming time, the time when you are meant to ripen, the time that's built right into your, you know, encoding. One flower will ripen in flower in the autumn and another one will come out in the spring, and everything has its own time. And again, that's something that we don't pay a lot of homage to because we want everything to be happening now. And that we have to, you know, sort of have our careers and have our recognition and have our whatever's right now. And it may be that we're building scaffolding for future generations, for seven generations hence. I love that number seven that keeps coming up.
I resonate with all of that. And I mean, I'm even thinking of quick fixes, you know, like in the medical community, or I mean, really, and we're all sort of indoctrinated with this. And even I went to naturopathic school where we really are all about the slow path. And still I will find myself getting caught up in wanting something very quickly and wanting like this treatment or to work so quickly. Otherwise, maybe it was useless. This whole idea of patience and uselessness, really, and how I think we are so driven to think that if something takes longer, maybe it doesn't work, or maybe it's better if we abandon it and do something just because of that quicker result, because maybe it has to do with certainty. You know, I mean, we're all like, the fear of the unknown is real. And when you have to wait for something, or if you're not sure, it's sort of this fear of what if I stick with something, or what if I dedicate my life to something for a certain amount of time, and then it doesn't pan out the way I think it does. And there's a huge fear there. Like, where will I be at that, you know, time? But it reminds me of something that you told me the last time we talked. And now I'm going to, hopefully I can word it in the right way, but I just remember it really stuck to me because you were saying that just because somebody doesn't have, I was kind of talking about some people in my life who wanted to write a book and they were storytellers. And just like, you know, growing up, I mean, they would just tell all these stories about their youth and they wanted to write a book. And I wasn't sure if they were actually going to write it. I think that's what I was saying. And you were like, well, you know, it doesn't really matter if they write the book. Wonderful, beautiful. You know, if that's what they want to do, but if they don't, they're still a storyteller at heart. And that's still them. And they're still influencing others and the world and their life just because that's who they are. There doesn't really need to be. We kind of think that there needs to be this concrete, like, I wrote a book, so that means I'm a storyteller. And now this justifies all of my work. But really, it doesn't have to. Like, just that act of us being and expressing who we are and what we love, even if there's not some concrete thing to prove it, doesn't mean that it doesn't have merit. And that was just so beautiful.
Yeah. That's so well said. I think, you know, there, it's kind of, we're being challenged, I think, to kind of shift our perspective dramatically from focusing on just the outcome and the stuff that we're producing to focusing on what we invest in it personally and what we learn from the process of doing it, how we create together, the relationships that are formed, the beauty that's discovered, all of that stuff is really the substance. And yeah. Everything else is like, that's the stuff that is great, but it's not the thing that's permanent. The thing that's permanent is whatever you've brought, whatever you've yeah. learned from what you've brought about.
I love that. And it reminds me that I had a hard time with Catherine and her destiny because of that chunk of time in the middle from like her happy youth, or not youth really, but childhood, right? Before destiny came. And then her happy old life, which was when she became the queen. And there was like that chunk of time that she really did suffer. And when I was sort of grappling with the story, it was hard for me to wrap my head around, was that necessary for her to get where she was now? Like, and for some reason, it was just like, it has to be necessary for it to make sense in the story or whatever it was. Like, I got really stuck on that. But the whole story, the story wouldn't be as powerful. Like, let's just look at it as a story. If we just had the beginning and then the end and nothing in that middle, like that middle was what the whole story was about, really. And that was like that was her story. And it's just such an interesting concept because I think a lot of us it's so hard to grapple with why we had to go through certain things or what was the point of certain things or acceptance or whatever it is. And at the end of the day, like in this story, there doesn't really need to be an answer. That is my story, you know?
Yes, I think that everyone comes to terms, anyone who's engaging this thing is going to come to terms with it in some way. There is great mystery in life and we don't know why things happen. Nobody can say why. It's beyond our ability to reason it out, but we do make sense of our suffering and we do story it and we try to understand it and grow through it. And I think the very fact that the pattern in this story speaks to so many people because we all know what it's like to try and build something and then have it undone, you know, be undermined either because we have a repeating health issue. You know, chronic pain is such a great parallel to this story because every time you think you've got some solution, some remedy, some approach, then, you know, it stops working and our other things happen. I was having falls. That's what happened to me. I was having successive falls. They came out of nowhere. I'd slip on the ice. I'd trip on a step. I fell out of a hammock. A hammock broke on me and my pain has always been back pain. So this stuff, these falls were just devastating right at a time when I thought that I was recovering. So the recovery journey was full of these interruptions, disruptions, underminings. And it would be very easy to say, you know, and I was saying, why does this always happen to me? I can't get ahead. I can't get any purchase. I'll never get back. I'll never get my life back. And that's where I was when I came into the story. So it was like, okay, good. I'm glad you're telling it this way because this is what we need to deal with here.
Yes. It's so blatant in the story. I mean, that's like what this story is about, is her frustration and it's really, I mean, even just how they, you know, there's not like a lot of description in fairy tales when it comes to how they're feeling, and it's like very kind of bare bones. But even in this one, it does like mention in the telling in the Pink Fairy book of her like crying, you know, and really like thinking about, am I ever going to be happy again? Like, it's just, the story is so potent with that feeling.
Yes. Yeah. There's more in this than many stories are, they're so universal that they don't fill it in with feelings. So you can fill your own feeling there, you know?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I kind of wanted to touch on a little bit symbols in the story, because I love to see like what other people pick up on. And I'm curious, was there a symbol that you sort of focused on or were more intrigued by and kind of had your own personal story attached to it?
Well, I got quite focused on the father for a while. Ah. And I was really intrigued by those three chairs. The father has a chair that's made of gold, a chair that's made of silver, and a chair that's made of diamonds. And when I went into his mansion in my imagination, I saw those chairs roped off in the foyer, in this very grand foyer, almost like a museum, you know, these three chairs. And when I was thinking about it, it was like, okay, well, chair. These are his seats of power. We think about, you know, chairman of the board, a chair at the university, you know, the chair is a throne. It's a seat of authority. And he had collected all three. It was like, you know, the equivalent of having a wall full of his recognitions and awards and achievements and all that stuff. So I thought those chairs were really interesting. And also that in the way I saw them, and that's always a good thing to be aware of, is that when you see something that is different than the way somebody else sees something, it's telling you something quite particular, because your imagination is giving that to you. And so for me, this idea that the chairs were roped off made me feel that the father was this sort of character who was always collecting, collecting, collecting. He could never be filled. He could never be satisfied with what he had. It was always collect and show. And the chair sort of epitomized that for me. That, and then, you know, kind of following that symbol through the story was interesting too, because then you come to the king at the end and he's in his throne and she's going to take a seat of power at the end there.
Yeah.
A seat of power that is so far not in our world, really. Mm-hmm. The queens in fairy tales, I find really interesting characters. You know, people go, oh, they're patriarchal stories and, you know, they're misogynist and everything. And I think, well, you know, the queens, lack of presence in the story is reflecting her lack of presence in our world. So what does it mean to put the queen back in the story and follow her story and retell it from her point of view and see what it means?
Mm-hmm.
What is the power of the queen, of the true queen, who is at the end of the story assuming the throne?
Yeah. Oh, that's so interesting. And how she got to power. He actually had to take off his crown and put it on the scale, which, yes. So it's not like all the gold, but his crown. I think that, well, the crown, I haven't really explored this symbol, but even just that symbol.
Yeah.
What that represents. I mean, what I can imagine, you know, like this king's crown and he had to actually take it off of his head. Seems like such a shift in energies even at that point. And
yes.
Now she gets to step up and sort of take her place.
Yes.
That's fascinating. Yeah. I had told you, I did a little group with a couple people and one of the things we went through some of the exercises on Wonderlit, and there is a part in there that where you pick up on symbols and you sort of, you go into it, like you were describing, and you see this, what story you have kind of around this symbol and you elaborate on that. And it was so interesting to see what people picked up on. And I wanted to mention one because I thought this was just so cool to hear. One of the participants, she picked up on that, the golden wheel that Destiny had. So it wasn't really Destiny. It was like the wheel. And what she, the story kind of that wheel told her was that the wheel had so much potential and like so much talent sort of. But it was only really used, or able to be expressed if Destiny was using it. So it was this interesting thing where she was brought to that scene where Destiny is sleeping under the seven coverlets when Catherine confronts her again with the other woman's destiny. And that wheel is sort of just not used, kind of on the bedside table, gathering dust and almost like just waiting, to be used again. And she just reflected that she, after going through that and seeing that in her imagination, she realized that she had parts of herself that she was sort of allowing to just gather dust kind of in the corner, and that were had so much potential and so much talent. But in order for it to be used, she had to sort of turn towards it and take it off the shelf and express it herself. And it was kind of a big thing for her.
Yeah. Isn't that interesting? Because her experience of that is then linked in. I'm thinking of the spoke on a wheel because it's linked into the whole core of the story, that this idea of, you know, you using the gifts that you have and engaging your destiny and all of that stuff. So she experienced that firsthand.
Yes. And that kind of brings it back full circle to what you said towards the beginning of this, which is that waiting and creating, you know, learning how to be patient with your life is so important, but you can't just do that. It's like, there's also this part of engagement and even confrontation and pursuing, like doing something. And so it's like the bringing those two opposites in a way together and learning how they actually do work really well together, even though I think before we can experience that, we tend to think that they're opposites and that they can't play in the same court. It's either I'm just waiting or I'm not waiting at all and I'm just going for it and using all my might, but really they can work really well together as we see.
It's a dance, isn't it?
Yeah. Oh, I like that. It is a dance. Okay. So I think that is a great way to sort of wrap it up. Any like takeaways or like last thoughts that you have about the story?
Well, you know, one of the great revelations in this story came to me when I told it for the first time, because you never really know how a telling is going to unfold. And when I told it at the storytelling event, I found myself ending it by saying that Catherine died a happy death. And it kind of floored me because I realized that this story was all culminating in her happy ending, literally her happy death. And I think I'm working with that thread still, because I think there's something so important in imagining your own happy ending, imagining a culmination of learned and experience and relationships with life and with yourself, and ultimately arriving at an ending that is a good ending. So we've kind of thrown away the happy ending for literature, but I think we need to take it back at least for life, right?
I love it. That's so well said. Oh, I love it. Wow, Michelle, thank you really so much for having this conversation with me and for talking about the story and bringing in all of your experience and sharing your story and all of that. Hope that we can talk again soon.
I do too. There's so much to talk about.
I know.
It's a real joy. Thank you.
Yes. And so for everyone listening, I'm going to link all the information to Wonderlit and to Michelle's website, where you can see all of her books, which I highly, highly recommend. Some of my favorite books you have actually written, The Tower Princess, The May Queen, and Brave Work also. If anybody's into the heroes or heroines journey, Brave Work. And it's a shorter book too. So it's so easy to read. That one was so impactful for me. And I'm actually going to read that again soon. It's on my list again. Okay, great. Thank you so much for listening. And until next time.
Hello, listeners. This is Dr. Katarina Guzman. And if you are interested in Jungian life coaching, and or if you have a history of burnout or feel that you are prone to burnout, take a look at my website, www.forestpathmindbody.com, and you can schedule a free discovery call with me, and we can see if we're a good fit.